Okay, welcome back. See, not too many of you took the opportunity to sneak out. Now, the last sort of basic concept I'm going to discuss is that of layered architectures and why, well, it will have an impact on sort of the modeling of networks, obviously. In a lot of cases, we may be examining sort of protocols specific to a layer, in which case, you know, the rest becomes just environment. But frequently, one also has to ask the question of how do various layers sort of interact with each other? And so, first of all, it's good to understand how the layers operate, and it's also sort of, it's a very elegant solution, really, or it's an elegant design. Now, there are issues with it, it's not necessarily always optimal, but it's quite nice. Okay. So networks are incredibly complex. We talked about our billions of nodes and billions of users and however many web pages. So there's a lot of data flying back and forth with a lot of requirements, and there's also a lot of hardware involved to enable this connectivity. Okay, and the architecture, and so what we might have started getting an inkling of, or it might have been sort of embedded in this, I started talking about paths through the network and nodes. And if you start thinking about that, you can also start thinking about there's sort of various jobs that need to be done to transmit data. First of all, it just physically has to be transmitted. So it has to be formed up into bits, and somehow those bits have to be sent through some medium to the other end. Okay. Now, we don't want them to just be random bits. They have meaning to us. So we want to ask questions like, did the right bits get to the other end? Because you can never guarantee 100% that something didn't happen. Okay. If you're happy that sort of the right bits got to the end, we started talking about packets being sent. Okay, so that's a bit more than a bit being sent. Now you have a packet being sent. And so how do you ensure a packet gets end-to-end. Then we also noted that it's probably not enough to send the packet along a single link, or it might not be enough to send a packet on a single link. You're not going to get from here to China or from here to India or from here to the US along one physical connection. So we've got this idea, again, we have to relay. And we all know the relaying is complex. It involves choosing paths, etc. Then, of course, when we got to the other end, well, we have these applications that want to make sort of sense. The applications now want these services. So we've got maybe a single packet at a time going end to end. The applications want a stream of packets arriving. So how do we provide that? Then, you know, even the applications themselves, there are certain ones that are just linked to networks, email, web browsing. Those don't happen except on networks, and so they're also codified within protocols. But what we might observe is that each of these sort of things relies on, you know, one another. So being able to send a packet end-to-end relies on being able to send a bit end-to-end. Being able to send a packet across multiple nodes relies on being able to send a packet across one node. Sort of having any sort of connectivity relies on having, you know, sending the packet over multiple nodes. Okay, so there's this reliance between the jobs, and it's sort of almost sequential. Okay. And that informs the design of networks, which is said to be in a layered architecture. Okay. And so there's a couple of things. This is how networks have actually been implemented, both sort of because initially it made sense at the time, and then sort of after a while people started saying, well, you know, there's a pattern here, and let's see what the characteristics are and why these characteristics are desirable. Okay. So we end up getting a reference model, which sort of tries to define this pattern, and so you can debate why it might be good or bad to do things this way, and also an implementation where sort of this is how things ended up getting constructed. Okay. And by and large, it's a very relatively simple and very elegant solution. There is, even in the last maybe decade, there is some concern that it's not always completely conducive to things like quality of service. There is a bit of redundancy built in and a bit of sort of non-optimality built in as well. Again, we're not going to really deal with that, although, again, the techniques that we're going to learn in this module might help with the analysis of such a of that sort of an issue. Okay, so what are the basic principles of layering? Well, there are the ideas again that you have a sequence of tasks that need to be done. These tasks are distributed, so they're at different locations. And so tasks at different locations, or the implementations of tasks at different locations, have to cooperate with each other in order to get useful work done. Okay, so that's a virtual communication. Now, physically, in order to get these tasks accomplished, they rely on adjacent layers. So, if you're in somewhere in the stack, then you rely on the lower layer in the stack to get your job done. Okay. And so you end up with an ordering through which you have to sort of perform the tasks. Okay. And that's the real communication route. With a computer, your data is going to travel down through all these layers, at some point physically get transported and back up through all the layers. Okay. And then somewhere at the basic layer, you have the transport, so you actually have the physical moving of, well, for network data, for a task, or for this case, a person. Okay. So in this case, sort of our overall goal is to get a person from point A to point B. And again, there's a number of things that have to happen that before that can occur. And so the person will proceed through each of the sort of subtasks to get to actually achieve physical transport. So they go buy a ticket, they bring their ticket to the airport, they check their baggage. You can't check your baggage until you have a ticket, and you can't sort of go onto the airplane until you've checked your baggage. Okay, so once you've got your baggage checked, you go to the gate. You're loaded onto the plane, you taxi onto the runway, the plane is cleared to fly, it goes, it might sort of go through a number of airspaces, routing will occur at all of them, so it might be bumping up and down a little bit through these tasks. At some point it'll land, you get through the gate, you get off, you get your baggage, and they've lost half of it or mangled half of it, so you go to complain. So the person is traveling through all these sort of sequences of steps. But there's also, again, information that's sort of end-to-end between various steps, okay? So you can't complain, or if you go to complain, you've got to show that you actually have a ticket. And usually what will happen is the ticketing office will go back to where you got the ticket and say, well, where'd the luggage go? Okay, so there's communication that's going to happen sort of within the two ticketing offices. Again, in terms of baggage checking, well, the baggage is coded. It's, you know, sort of labeled as being your baggage. It's labeled in terms of destination. And so there's a bit of communication between the two baggage ends, maybe not so much about the gates. The runways, well, once you've taken off, well, you have to land somewhere, so the information that you're coming in will be recorded, and again, routing will talk with sort of the air traffic control will talk with adjacent air traffic controls to make sure there's not a problem. Okay. So, again, it can look a little funny. It can look a little funny when we start talking about it in terms of networks. It's worth thinking about because, again, this is one of those. It is one of those basic principles underlying networks, and a lot of discussions of networks rely on you having some idea of a layered network model. Typically, you know, people start talking about, you know, if they're developing a protocol or something, they'll talk about what layer the protocol fits in. Maybe they'll talk about, well, it's between these two layers, which you don't want to hear, but, you know, they'll talk about it in terms of this layered model. Performance, again, is going to be dependent on the layering a lot of times. Yeah. Okay, so I sort of went through all of this, but we can think, you know, just to sort of again get the terminology. Each layer implements a service. It relies on the service below it, and it intends the service for its corresponding remote layer. And the, again, implementation of these services is through a protocol. A protocol is going to specify, well, what communication happens between adjacent layers and what communication happens at the interface and what tasks need to be performed. Okay, so that's the idea. To bring it back to networks now, again, the same thing happens with networks. And so you can start thinking, well, how many layers would we need? And you, at a minimum, you'd think you'd need two. One concerned with sort of data transport, so network issues, and one focused on then the requirements of the application. Okay. Now, that's still going to be a lot of work for each of those layers, so realistically you'll break it up into a few more layers. And typically, the four-layer model is considered to be pretty reasonable. You think about the physical issues concerned with transporting data from link over a link. You think then about the digital transmission of a message or a packet. So how do we do? We've got these bits going. How do we make sense of them as a packet, not just as a sequence of bits? Then, sort of, again, end-to-end over potentially multiple links. And finally, some idea of the user application. You know, at the very least, you have to have some interface between the user applications and the network. So how does the user request a network, a service from the network? So it has to be at least some idea of applications as well. Okay. And again, the data is sort of going to actually communicate vertically up and down these stacks. But the information contained in the data is meant for adjacent layers. Okay. Now, again, in the late 70s, a model was proposed, and so this was the first sort of proper articulation of this idea of layering. And it was, and the idea was that this model would be presented, and then people would start implementing the various layers with sort of, you know, would come up with actual implementations of the various layers of this model. Okay. And this is the OSI reference model. It has 7 layers, and so we get the physical layer, which again, physical transmission of bits, the data link layer to organize bits so that they actually make sense in some sort of more coherent frameworks like a packet. The network layer gets the packets end to end. The transport layer is concerned with sort of end-to-end connectivity, so providing the different types of services to the applications. So establishing, if necessary, establishing and managing connections. And that was all pretty reasonable. Then the application layer got sort of broken up into these 3 bits. And that bit never really sort of flew. Okay. Typically, you know, again, applications just worry about their own concerns and do what they need. And so typically that's not necessarily used. Okay. So at more or less the same time as the OSI model was being formulated, people were already going ahead and implementing network architectures. And the biggest of these is the TCP/IP protocol suite, which is fundamentally what underlies the modern internet. specifically the internet protocol, which, you know, governs how packets get from point A to point Z, is sort of glues it all together. That addressing scheme glues it all together. Okay. So TCP/IP didn't have any thoughts of sort of being a model. They just were interested in efficient implementation. But nevertheless, a lot of the same concepts applied. You had a physical layer, and so there was implementation within this physical layer. You had a link layer, and so that got us our sort of end-to-end frames or our end-to-end our data over a link. You had the network layer, which got you from point A to point Z, main thing being a clever addressing scheme, and then, of course, routing protocols, so some decision-making as well. You had a transport layer, so concerned with sort of end-to-end connectivity, was it going to happen or not? And finally, you had applications, and this was the application layer essentially just consisted of a suite of useful applications. Okay, so a mail protocol, actually they're on the next slide, so you have FTP, HTTP, mail protocols, etc. Okay. So when TCP/IP is implemented, typically the data link and physical layers are considered as a package. Maybe one of the easiest places to see this is like the 802 suite of protocols. So you do combine the physical transmission of bits with the sort of link layer issues as well. You had IP as the network layer, you had TCP or UDP at the transport layer, and then you had these applications relying on that. Okay. And furthermore, you had an interface between the application layer and the TCP UDP layer, the transport layer, that allowed people to create their own applications and request the network services for them. Okay. So, it's the OSI model is still talked about and thought about because it's the one that sort of quantified all the theoretical concepts. So the virtual communication, data encapsulation, which we'll see in a sec, the idea of relying on adjacent services, and roughly what services should be in each layer. Now, nobody ever implemented any protocols related to the OSI model, so in that sense, it's not that useful. Again, TCP/IP, well, that's what everybody implements the protocol. Well, there are other layered models, but a lot of the implementation goes around that. But they then will sort of revert to talking about these, again, OSI layers in their discussions. Okay, so for reference purposes. Okay, so just to give an example of how data will then travel through these layers and then through the network, we'll have a look at, we want to transport this message M. So we have an application at one end, and we want to transport it to its destination at the other. And so again, there's an interface between the application and the transport layer, where the application requests that the data be sent to the destination. In order to implement that request, the transport layer will attach on some header information. So it'll attach this header information. The header information is intended then for some remote, for the transport layer in some remote location. Okay. Now, the transport layer then is going to request that the network layer actually, send out the data into the network, or, well, decide sort of along what link the data should be sent to the network, so the first step in the path. The network layer is going to regard both the transport layer header and the message as just data to be transported. So it's going to what's called encapsulate that data. It will never change that information. It will just add on its own information. And going down the links, that continues on. The link layer, the network layer, requests that the link layer sort of form everything up into frames to be sent. It regards everything it gets from the network layer as header, as data, and then adds on its own header information, sort of to tell a remote link layer what needs to be done. Okay, something wrong with the graphics there, but okay. So, and then the link layer will rely on the physical layer to actually transport the data, and then the data is going to have to go through a series potentially of intermediate nodes. Now, depending on the functionality of that node, it will need to process various layers of the data. So, if there's no routing decision, if you're just essentially forwarding on the data, well, you still have to make sure that the information within the data is correct and can be sent on, but you don't need to worry about routing. If you have a router and you're worried about routing, well, you have to make sure the data is received correctly, and then you also have to make a decision about where it goes next. Okay, so you go up, it'll be received, it'll be checked for correctness and the meaning of the data. The final address of the data will be examined based on that. You'll decide the next destination, and it'll be sent out along the next link. Okay, and finally, when it reaches its destination, it goes up through all of the layers to the application layer. Okay, so the concepts of this layered architecture are important. The layering within the layered architecture does impact on network performance, although again, frequently when we're talking about examples, we'll end up focusing in on a specific layer or the functionality of a specific layer. But it is possible that you also can model the interaction between the layers and sort of analyze the efficiency of this interaction as well, again, using the sorts of techniques that we're going to be describing in the rest of the module. Okay. Now, as I said, this module sort of, unfortunately in some extent, but we don't have time to do everything, does not really give a survey of the protocols associated with the given layers. As I say, it's we'll be focusing on certain protocols, or at least certain how certain protocols work at various layers. So you'll see some, but if you haven't seen any of this before, again, get the textbook, have a look at how the protocols work, at least at some high level, for the various layers. And yeah, I guarantee you it'll be time well spent, just not just for this module, but for sort of modules across the program. Okay, and again, there's a couple of references. Kuro's is quite readable, and I always find Stalling also to be quite readable. But to be honest, any book probably written since the 80s will tell you pretty much the same thing. Maybe the specific examples of protocols vary, and they start talking about wireless at some point, but the basics and actually the sort of philosophical ways that things are done really haven't changed that much. Okay, so we're on to our final topic now, which is network performance. So we've said we're going to be using queuing theory and simulation to analyze networks. Well, what we want to analyze is the performance of networks. And so what I'm going to do today is just sort of run through at a sort of a million miles away what we mean by performance. And just to give you, again, sort of ideas about where all the problems sort of arise. And then, again, as we go through various techniques, we'll see that we'll see applications to sort of specific performance questions or problems. Okay. So we can look at network performance from two perspectives. You can look at it from the point of view of the network. And what the network says is, I've got all these potentially expensive resources, I want to make sure they're being used. Okay, and used well. And so measures of that can be throughput, so how many packets can be pushed from through the network, so they go in and they come out, so how many are what's the rate at which they come out? Efficiency, and sort of there's a few ways of thinking about efficiency. One is what percentage of the network resources are in use at any given time. So is the network well utilized? And again, assuming that there's a demand, is the network well utilized? Obviously, if there's no demand, that's different. The second way of looking at it is what percentage, that's the same. The second one should be what percentage of time is a given network resource in use. Okay, so sort of flip it around. You've got sort of if you fix a time, how much resources are in use? If you fix a resource, what percentage of the time is the resource in use? Okay, so, and finally, loss rates. So, how much of what sort of went in, how much actually arrives at the other end? Okay. Now, what this doesn't do is it doesn't distinguish between individual users and individual applications. So it just says overall, sort of, are we doing well? You can do extremely well overall and still have sort of individual applications very unhappy. For instance, if you say you have a circuit switching link, if you have the 10 users that we talked about earlier who are actually all the time using the link, then your efficiency is 100%. If you had an 11th user, well, they're actually, if they want their packets transmitted, then they're going to be disappointed. So if these 10 users are in, monopolizing everything, the network is happy, it's pumping out as much information, data as it can, but we have our 11th user who's very unhappy. So a second way of looking at network performance is from the perspective of users, and that can be individual users, or you can then sort of aggregate that individual usage into maybe something interesting. Okay. And so from the individual user's point of view, they have certain application requirements, like the requirements of voice over IP are different than that of file transfer, are different than that of streaming video. And then, those requirements can be characterized by sort of tolerated error rates, tolerated loss rates, tolerated delay, tolerated jitter. And then, of course, there's a question of can that be matched up with what the network's willing to give? Okay. Now, we're not going to get into, again, exhaustive categorization of what these application requirements are. I will post, however, the ITUT recommendation G1010, and for something coming out of a standards body, it's actually quite extremely readable, and so I would suggest you at least have a look over it, and again, you'll get a feel for the sort of, again, what application requirements might be. Okay, so we're not going to really continue on the, sort of what the applications need end of things. Our final few slides are geared toward where do sort of performance issues come in networks. So what causes sort of networks to be potentially less than ideal. Okay. And again, this differs depending on whether the network implements circuit switching or packet switching, obviously. And so we'll look at each of those two cases individually. Okay. So again, the idea of circuit switching was that you set up this end-to-end connection. It was just a pipe of, you know, a certain bit rate along which data could flow. So in this case, again, there's a lot of things that the network can be quite specific on. The applications are offered a fixed bit rate, and just depending on the physical characteristics of the network, well, some of the bits will be in error, and so error leads to loss. Okay. And so there can potentially be delays in the system. The main delay is the time it takes to set up a connection. Okay, once your connection is set up again, your data is pipelined through that connection. Okay. And also something that arises in circuit switch networks is the possibility that you can't make your connection. So there's a blocking probability as well. Okay. And you can still get this, it still happens all the time with mobile phones. If there are too many people using them, you won't be able to make the next, you know, an additional call. You know, all the resources are taken, sorry. It used to, historically, it would have happened in the telephone networks or at very busy times. Okay. So, again, the network might be is characterized in terms of bit errors, but what a bit error essentially leads to is the probability of a packet being in error or a block of data being in error. So a block of data being in error, we won't call it a packet. And it, you can derive that that's is roughly equivalent. It's proportional to the length of the packet. Okay. And so even then you can see that there are design decisions in that. So you want to pick your packet. The shorter you pick your packet, the less probability it's an error, but also the more overhead you can possibly have. Okay. And so what's the problem with overhead? Well, it's an efficiency issue. If you have overhead, then that's data that's not sort of useful to the end applications, but just essentially wasted. Okay. So, in end-to-end delay of transmission is dependent on the bit rate. So again, the bits have to be formed up, and this takes a certain amount of time. What's nice is once they're formed, they do, again, essentially travel straight through. You can have processing delays. Those are usually at the sort of intermediate points. Those are usually negligible. You always have to remember that physically, data takes time to travel from point A to point B. It's at some proportion of the speed of light, but it's still an amount of time, and if you go a long enough distance, it's non-zero. Okay. And, of course, you can't start the transmission until you actually set up your connection. Okay. Now, transmission delay for circuit switch networks isn't going to actually be that interesting for us. It's actually pretty easy to just get calculator and work out. Blocking probability will be of interest to us, and there's some very nice results relating to that. Okay. Now, packet switch networks are a lot more uncertain, have a lot more variability than circuit switch networks. In circuit switch networks, once you set up the circuit, your variability is pretty much gone. Packet switch networks, again, you've got the possibility of sort of queues forming and delay forming at the intermediate nodes. And the more complicated your connectivity, so the more potential sources for these delays, the harder it becomes then to analyze it, and the sort of, again, the less certain it becomes. Okay. And so these are going to prove to be sort of, again, quite interesting for us in terms of analysis. Okay. Now, for the moment, again, we're just going to look at various factors that are leading to delaying. So we can think of having sort of an individual packet traveling through, and what problems might that individual packet encounter. Okay. So, how can we measure this? Well, there's another number of factors that are associated with this performance. We talk about the maximum packet size. And so, again, this is trying to balance error rates and overheads, so that you pick something that's sort of reasonable. We want to look at throughput, so how many packets on average are transferred through the networks, or what's the rate of packet transfer. We lost our efficiency, but we want to look at efficiency, and we need to look at error, so there can be sort of loss on a link, and there can be loss due to queuing, and sort of you need to look at that not just on a link-by-link basis, but an end-to-end basis. Okay. And we can, again, either look at this from the network perspective in throughput, or we can say, well, on average, if you have a packet, how long is that packet going to take to transmit? How long is one packet going to take to transmit through the network? Okay. And so the additional sort of delay factor that we have now is the queue. The packets are stored, and if there is sort of contention for a resource, they have to queue up and wait. Okay, so this is something that's different than before. Okay. So store and forward means that no matter what, there is some delay for the packet at a node. Even if the resource is free, the packet has to be stored and retransmitted, so there's an issue there. Additionally, the resource might not be free, so the packet will have to wait for other packets before moving forward. Okay. And potentially, if there are too many packets contending for a resource, then our buffers will get full and packets will be dropped, so that also adds an additional loss factor. Okay. So we end up with four sources of delay for a packet. At each node, the packet is processed, so it's checked for errors, and routing decisions are made. So you know, when it's stored, it's examined, and you decide where it needs to go next. That takes a certain amount of time. A lot of times we assume that that's fairly low, but it does take time. Again, if there's contention for a resource, you get a queuing delay. Each time the packet is transmitted, there's an additional delay while the bits are physically formed for the packet. So that's the transmission delay. And then again, the packet has to physically travel along each of the links in turn. Okay. And so that's a propagation delay. Okay. And so here we have an example. So we have a load with 10 cars or packets that need to go through a node. And there's a certain a certain transmission time, so it takes 12 seconds for each car to travel through the node, and so that means that if you have 10 of these cars, it's going to take 2 minutes for all of them to clear the node. Now, they have to propagate, so you have 100 kilometers, they have to travel over 100 kilometers. They do that at the rate of 100 kilometers per hour. So that means that when this last packet travels through the node, it still has an hour to reach the next toll booth. Okay. And so the next thing to note is that when they reach this next toll booth, they're again, each of them is going to take the 2 minutes, it's going to take another 2 minutes to get them all through the next toll booth. Okay. And so you can play around with those numbers and see that in certain cases, your transmission time is going to be dominate. In certain cases, your propagation time is going to dominate. We will see that a bit later when we start talking about like the Aloha protocol versus Ethernet protocols. There, because of the setup, there is an issue about transmission versus propagation times. Okay, so that just sums up your delays possible. The one that's particularly tricky, again, all these sort of transmission propagations, well, they're fixed once you know a few parameters. The one that's tricky is the queuing delay. Again, this is going to depend on the demand in the system. The demand in the system depends on the end applications over which we have no control. To some extent, it also depends on the structure of the network and sort of where demands can possibly be coming from. So this is the one that we're going to find interesting, and it leads to sort of, again, the basic mathematical construct of a queue. But here we'll just sort of say that queues have a certain behavior in terms of delay, which is that they're fine as long as there's not too many people waiting. But at some point, if you have sort of more and more demand, at some point the length of the queue is going to get longer and longer. And if the demand for the queue sort of equals the bandwidth, then because of uncertainty, we're actually going to be in a situation where, again, the delays can get arbitrarily long. Okay, and in terms of loss, well, we still have the possibility that we have lost just due to errors. But we've added loss due to queuing. So if your queue is too big, the buffers are finite, and again, if you arrive to a finite, to a full buffer, your packet gets lost. Okay. So just to take a look then at throughput, which is in terms of either bits or packets per some time unit. And so you can either look at it sort of instantaneously, sort of the rate at a given time, or the average over longer periods. And what we see is that it's always going to be limited by the bottleneck. So whatever your sort of least bandwidth link is, that's going to determine your throughput over a path. Okay, so in this case, we have RS is less than RC. Our end-to-end throughput is going to be RS. And if RS is greater than RC, our end-to-end input is going in F. Throughput is going to be RC. Okay, and just sort of typically the way networks are set up, the bottleneck either happens sort of at the edge, or sort of, it tends to happen at the edges, not in the car. It's typically a little bit easier to manage the data rates through the car. Okay. So, just to sort of wrap up and sort of say where we're going with all of this, we've seen, and you know, we've seen that we have various delay factors in the network. Various delay factors, various loss factors, and we've looked at them quite simplistically so far. We've talked about averages, so we've talked about one path where we know who's going on the path at any time. Typically, again, we have these 10 cars, but that could grow to be 100 cars rapidly, or it could shrink down to be 0 cars. Okay, again, due to, you know, just who decided to set off for work in the morning at the same time. Okay, so we need to somehow, not just say, oh, we have 10 cars, but we've got some variable number of cars entering the system. Okay. The toll booth, again, is going to represent a delay point. So you've got here, you've got your queue. Cars are waiting to access this toll booth. Again, we've already said how many cars are waiting can be variable. Okay, so we're going to want to characterize how many cars are going to wait, and then how the toll booth is going to deal with them. Maybe if you have if you've tried to park here recently, at some point they give up and they just open the barriers. So you've changed the way you deal with your cars. Okay, all of this leads to randomness. It also, you know, the cars may not each take 12 seconds to clear the toll booth. Some of them might be old bangers that sort of limp through at half that speed. So all of this is randomness. It represents a more realistic look at the networks, or sort of at what is actually going on. But it requires sort of much more sophisticated analysis. And so again, this is where the queuing theory comes in, and then we'll see. Well, you can model these systems using queues. You get, to some extent, you get a more realistic representation of the system, and then when you've modeled using these queues, you can either use analysis, so queuing theory, to try and say something about, well, delays and et cetera, or you can use simulation techniques. And so what's going to go on in this module is sort of, again, presenting the mathematical underpinnings. So how do you, at least a little bit of, we're going to show you, a little bit of queuing theory. Again, it's a very complex subject and you can go on for years. And also some of the basics of the theoretical underpinnings of simulations. Okay, so there are packages like NS, OpNet, that basically you just pop something in at one end and something else comes out at the other. What we're trying to do here is, again, what's the basic mathematics that underpins that, and why might you or might you not have confidence in the results you get out of one of these simulation packages? So the next 2 weeks will be Connor McArdle, and he'll just be, doing some sort of mathematical fundamentals. So have a good weekend. I will see you in a few weeks.